Hey guys, it's Brendo from Perth Fit Fam. Thanks for coming on. We've got another one of our live interviews. Today we're going to be discussing, well, I'm going to be catching up with Alice Round that we posted about. And it's coming off the back of the Joe Rogan podcasts that were on recently. So there were two Joe Rogan podcasts specifically. The first one was with Chris Kresser, who's a paleo advocate. We had Joel Kahn, who was a vegan, so they had a bit of a debate. We have Dom DeGostino, who's the keto, I guess, go-to guy within the world. And then Lane Norton as well, who is Alice's, well, was one of Alice's mentors. So what we thought we'd do, we have a bit of a chat because these guys all had massively opposing views. And we're just going to help break it down a little bit, give you guys a bit of an insight, answer any questions. So feel free, shoot your questions. If you can, there's a little arrow button down here somewhere. Make sure you give this post a share. There's an emoji button down here somewhere. So make sure plenty of emojis, plenty of comments. Give us some love. I'm about to bring Alice on now. Whilst Alice is going live, I've just launched the new Perth Fit Fam YouTube channel. So there's going to be a lot of raw vlog material available on there. So make sure you head over to YouTube. Give us a follow. Give us a subscribe. Check it out. Yeah, so heaps going on from this end. She's on. Alice Round. Hello. Welcome to the party, man.
Hold on. It's really quiet.
No. Is it? I can hear you.
Yeah. Can you turn yours up?
Yeah. Is that all right?
Yeah. All good. How are you?
Awesome. I'm good, man. I'm good. I've been busy. So just in the background, Shell was like just cooking. Like we're trying to put this together. I'm like a couple of it's 7 o'clock already. So we're cutting it fine, which is awesome. Here is the eggplants, the eggplants. Okay, cool. People are throwing us eggplant emojis already, which is good.
Awesome.
Oh, far out. They're all coming through. This is great. All right, so I want to dive straight into it. You and I have already done a podcast. If people really want to delve into, I guess, the different types of diets, I highly recommend that they go do that. And, you know, we'll give people the link for our last chat. But what I wanted to lead in with is obviously we're going to be discussing the Joe Rogan podcast that we're on. So your mentor, one of your mentors, Lane, was on one of them and he did a great job. There was a vegan or plant-based diet advocate the day before alongside a paleo advocate going head-to-head. And then there was Dom DeGostino, who's the, I guess, the main keto guy with Lane, which was a much better conversation, I think. So just to frame it for people. So last year, I think most people who are viewing probably would have seen that I did this 12-month diet experiment. I went through every single diet in like intimate detail of what they did. And I would say probably you and I would be almost the two best people to have this conversation in Perth. Just in regards to what that
was. It's a bit cold, but we'll take it.
I think so. I think it's cool to say.
It's definitely an area that I think we're both very interested in. We've both done a lot of research in, both anecdotal and, I guess, on my end, more of a scientific background as well. More so the guinea pig with yourself. I've also been a guinea pig for a lot of diets, put clients through things. I think it's a topic of interest, diets and the different methods. And there's something new every year. I've been in this industry now for 10, 11 years. I think I've known you for like 8 years. So you've
15 been, years for me, yeah. Yeah, 15 years.
I couldn't count all the diets that I hear of on one hand or two or fingers and toes. So it's been an interesting discussion. And I just think that there's a lot of people jumping on bandwagons still occurring. And I'd love for that to stop and just people to get more educated.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you get to watch both of the podcasts or either
I of them? I watched a little bit of the vegan one. I watched the whole one with Lane and Dom. I've listened to a few other debates with Lane and Dom in terms of the keto Lane's just, you know, different points of view there. I know this sounds a little harsh, but sometimes with some of the vegan and paleo ones, I just get a little bit over it because a lot of it I don't agree with and I try my best to listen and, you know, hear that, but I think I got through about 45 minutes of it and I was like, yeah, that's enough for me.
That was 45 minutes of the first one or was that the one with Lane and with Dom?
No, I listened to the whole one with Lane and Dom, the 3 hours. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Sorry, it just cut out for a little bit whilst you were explaining that. I agree. I tried to listen to the first one again today, and it was just such a hard discussion to listen to because it just kept on going around in circles. Chris was trying to defend himself, whereas Joel was definitely the aggressor, but it wasn't really going anywhere. And two key points, and this is what I want to make clear to everyone who watches or listens to this. The two main points on both interviews is when they couldn't come to an agreement, they stopped and they said, listen, in reality, like 95% of it is go to the gym, stick to a healthy diet, and take care of your other lifestyle factors, which is like
stress.
And they're like, that's 95% of it. Literally all of this argument in this space is for 5% or less.
Yeah.
And people will probably get a result, like no matter what they do, as long as they're compliant and they actually adhere to the program, which is 95% of the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that people are overcomplicating what shouldn't be overly complicated. And you know why people overcomplicate things? Because it's easier to sell products. It's easier to sell gimmicks than what it is to sell health and fitness for what it is. And from an ethical standpoint as a coach, I may have less followers and less clientele because of that, because I'm going to give it to someone straight and be like, stop eating like a dickhead and move your ass more. You know, that as opposed to go on a keto diet that's going to shut down the Krebs cycle and you just won't have to do anything and you're going to lose fat. It's like, that sounds way easier. So what are people going to do in society? People are always going for the easiest possible answer. And unfortunately, when it comes to getting results, not a lot of people are willing to accept that you can't beat hard work. You can't beat compliance to a nutritional regime. You can't beat consistency is another big one. People yo-yoing all the time and not willing to actually commit to something for an extended period of time. And it sucks. I get it. I love results overnight. Like, absolutely. Yeah. Wouldn't we all? But I've learned from doing all those shitty diets that they all end up in one place. A toxic place with food, a bad relationship with not only yourself because you've failed so many times and you're like, I'm a failure, and you start to attach that emotion, but also toxicity with bad foods and bad this and bad that. When in reality, if we just go back to the basics of wholesome, nourishing foods for 80, 90% of the time and a bit of flexibility in there to have a bit of ice cream or a couple of squares of chocolate, then really it just simplifies things. Like, I know this is going to sound harsh, but I think there's a problem in society of what I like to call the special snowflake syndrome, where people think that they have this special snowflake that needs this magical diet with fairy dust and unicorns. And fucking, I saw unicorn water that you could buy on the internet the other day. I'm like, not shit.
Oh, wow. Like, that is that, like, that's actually the brand name. That's great.
Yeah. I was like, well done. That is good marketing. But you know what I mean? Like, I think people are on the hunt thinking that they're this special snowflake, that they need this really customized, really intricate diet, you know, all of these supplements, all of these things, when in reality, for the majority of the population, if you are wanting to get in decent shape, you know, not get, say, like stage lean, that requires a bit more effort, but at the same time, it's the same principles. It's just more aggressive. So I coach a lot of comp prep, but also a lot of lifestyle clients. And often people say, do you prep people differently? Whether they want fat loss as a lifestyle client just to look hot in a bikini in summer, or someone getting on stage. Not really, to be honest. The biggest difference is that the people that are getting stage lean are fucking motivated because they have to get on stage half naked in front of people and they have a finish line. Not only that, but we have a date. Whereas people that are a lifestyle client, you know, we can go a little more relaxed, but then sometimes people get too relaxed because they're like, oh, I can slow down. I can take my foot off the pedal. Oh, I don't have to be as compliant this week. So no, it's not really that different. In terms of getting someone lean, the approach is the same. It's just less aggressive, but you're still utilizing the same principles, really.
Yeah, 100%. So with all of these diets as well, like one thing that I want to point out is any of them like can work. Essentially, when I did mine, any of them could have worked, provided I was compliant, which is what we've established. Now, the big thing is the blood markers and the benefits that they claim.
Yeah.
Again, I throughout my little process, throughout all the diets, there was pretty much no change to my blood markers being a healthy male adult. And this is, you know, I'm supposed to have low inflammation, like whatever it is.
all of these positive, like to reach a positive or an optimal level of like for your bloods, this is what I think, Lane, it's what all of them were explaining, is if you train and you eat with a slight calorie deficit, you're going to see every single result that a keto or any diet claims to do anyway. Like it's just part of it. So that was probably one of the biggest takeaways from me out of this, is any inclination that I could have had, okay, well, maybe one of these diets does offer something. Hearing that, and it was pretty much unanimously between them, I'm like, okay, well, even more so, that should take the guesswork out for people. Like, just get over it. Like, get over trying to find a silver bullet. And even like you said, this snowflake diet mentality, get over trying to find something like special. If you're a compliant, it's probably going to work. Unless you're the one in seven, it's going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'll get people that have come to me and say, yeah, I've done keto and I've done paleo and I've done this and I've done that. What are you going to do for me? What's your dietary approach? And I'll go, my dietary approach is whatever gets you results, whatever you can comply to, and whatever can be you at optimal performance and also health. It's not going to be, it might be a part and parcel, some of these things rolled into one big dietary plan, but it's going to come down to the actual, what's going to work for that client. And like you said, it's really interesting in terms of bloods and things like that and dietary markers. The biggest things that are going to influence, let's say, for example, sex hormones and inflammation. Okay, let's look at that. The biggest thing that is going to impact hormones, and people often don't want to hear this, is being severely overweight. Okay, if you are overweight and you are pushing, and this is why I had a girl call me out the other day and she said, you know, you're all about self-love and body image, but yet you're trying to get people lean. And I said, yeah, because some people are fucking unhealthy. If you are carrying, I should probably stop swearing, sorry.
That's right.
Mum's not listening. But if you are carrying excessive body fat, so let's say for a female above 30%, say on a DEXA, a male above 25-ish, and a lot of that is in your midsection, your abdominal region, this is dangerous. Like, we're not talking about this from an aesthetic standpoint. This is when you're going to see a lot of your blood markers change. This is when you're going to see a lot of problems, dropping testosterone, high estrogen, all of these things. A lot of these problems can be fixed by getting to, and I'm not going to say a low body fat level, I'm going to say a healthy body fat level. And that's really important, because the opposite, if you go the extreme and you go super lean, comp shredded, you know, 5% for a male, 10% for a female, same sort of thing's going to happen in some regard, not the exact same markers, but you are going to see a decline in sex hormones, all of this production, because again, your body, it's not used to being that lean, much like it's not used to being that overweight. So the biggest thing is, if you can get to this healthy, happy medium of where your bodies want to maintain homeostasis, then everything will maintain homeostasis. As long as you are eating in a reasonably balanced regime, there is no extremes in your diet, so you're not eating, you know, super, super high protein or extremely high fat, extremely high this, extremely high that, you're not really going to see much of a muchness. It all really comes down to health at the end of the day. Probably the other one is stress. You will see some responses, stress response in terms of blood markers. Yep. And that's another big one. I don't want to get into this topic tonight because it's a big one, but chronic fatigue, adrenal fatigue, that whole syndrome that people, that is going around, it has been going around for years. A lot of it is just lifestyle intervention and making changes in your lifestyle. It's not the fact that you need to go on a low carb diet to change an insulin response. Fucking get more sleep and get more rest. You are stressed out, okay?
Yeah.
So I think this is something important people need to understand. Strip it back and understand, this is the big thing I always say to clients, what is causing the problem? What are the triggers? The triggers are the fact that you're overweight. The triggers are the fact that you are not sleeping, that you are binge eating on the weekends and eating really well Monday to Friday, that you are, say, being inconsistent with your gym training, going 3 days a week and then one the next, you're drinking, all of these different things. Like, define the trigger rather than looking for the dietary strategy that you think is going to get the best result that you've seen online, because that's the problem.
Yeah, 100%. Now, one thing that we discussed on the phone, and I wanted you to run through this because this is way out of my league, is going back to the podcasts again, all top of their field, all completely different views, and all producing data to support their views, most of which is inconclusive. How do these reports come about? How do these studies come about?
Yeah, cool. So I think that the general population often doesn't understand what research and science is. So a lot of the time you hear people say, oh, like this has been scientifically proven, blah, blah, blah. So if something's scientifically proven, it basically means that there would have been either a single study or a meta-analysis. Now, a meta-analysis is where there is several studies, and then basically from those several studies, you'll find a more conclusive result. So if you're ever looking for data, I always like to look for meta-analysis because I know it's not just one study. Because one study can be slightly biased. There is a lot of variables when you're looking at research. So when I was in my university degree in our last year of dietetics, we had to run a study for pretty much went for about a year. And we were doing a test on athletes. It was on a performance beverage. I was going to say a performance enhancing drug. No, on a beverage. And it was basically a protein and carbohydrate fluid or just a carbohydrate fluid for endurance athletes. And it was double blinded, so I didn't know what they were getting. We had them in over the course of 6 weeks. And we started off, I believe, with 16 athletes, which is a small sample range for a study like that. But to get people to come in and run for like an hour several times, we needed trained athletes. There's a lot of variables. We had about 8 drop out due to either injuries or different things. And then our sample range only ended up at 8, which is not enough to get a conclusive answer. So we couldn't actually publish that data. So the biggest thing with research is it's expensive, it takes a lot of time, and it's actually very hard to get really good subjects, especially in humans. It's obviously why a lot of studies are on rats and things like that, and you get a lot of people call out and say, oh, it was a rat study, it doesn't count. And I'm like, rats are actually very similar to humans in terms of the response they elicit. So I wouldn't call out that data. It's just an easier way of generating data and results. So research... again, like I said, it can be biased. They can set up a study a certain way that they know they're going to elicit a certain result. So always look for who's run the study, what the company is, because often companies pay universities to test. That's what happened with this product. We got sent a product, our university had to test it. And then also look for, like I said, a meta-analysis. See if there's something that groups a few studies together. There's two great areas that you could subscribe to. So I'm subscribed to MASS, which is basically, like Eric Helms, Poravel, like a certain sort of coaches in America. They put together more so the sports science-based data that's come up that month, and every month they release and publish somewhat a meta-analysis of some of the informative data and the most recent data. Because the thing with science as well is that it's ever evolving as people are ever looking for new things to study, which is why for, you know, some years everyone's saying, you know, eggs are good and cholesterol's good, and the next year they're bad because the studies come out. Then the next year they're good again. So I think it's like take everything with a grain of salt, make sure there's a few studies done on it, understand all of that, and just be careful with who you listen to, and assuring that they're coming from a very unbiased standpoint, because even like me and Lane, we're going to have our biases, you know, everyone's going to have their biases. But I think as long as that person's being ethical, that's the most important thing. And if someone can't show you any science, then that is a big red flag. If someone's just, oh yeah, my friend Bob from next door said this, you know, and if Bob hasn't got any data to back it up, then I'd be questioning it for sure. Science is science at the end of the day. People also have to jump through hoops to get these actually published. So if someone creates a shit study and they can't, there's so many variables you have to do and submit and enter. It takes a lot of time, but it goes through a big board and it has to get approved. So it's not a case of just writing a study and popping it online. It has to be very approved. It's a long process. If you guys want someone really good to follow that's in WA, my mate Jackson Pios, he's doing his PhD at the moment, and he's doing it on refeeds and diet breaks. So really interesting subject. He puts up a lot of his data on his Instagram, and he's someone that can explain research a lot better. He's a massive nerd, you know, Superman freak, bodybuilder still, so he's not all nerd. But the big thing with research as well, to finish that off, is that research is amazing, and there's new research coming out every day, but also nothing can beat the actual what occurs anecdotally. So for example, I work with, say, my sort of VIP clients I work with every week, so about 30 females. Now, I could try a dietary approach with all of them that's the same, and I don't for this specific reason, and they could all respond completely differently. So I think the thing is, research is great, but at the same time, you're often kind of learning and researching when you're trialing things with your clients and with yourself. And it's just a case of, I guess, taking things with a grain of salt, and making sure that you're looking at a variety of data, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Now, going back to compliancy and Joe Rogan's rant, and this is one of the biggest, like, I loved it, and I there was a conversation on Facebook within some people in Perth, and I agree with what he said, is that the major issue with what they're saying isn't each other's diets as such. It's essentially compliance to a diet. And then later on in the first podcast, Dr. Joel, who was the vegan, who was very strong, like, in his thoughts, essentially is what I've said, turned around and said, oh, no, your diets are fine. Like, if the world just had, you know, your diet, my diet, you know, this other diet, and they removed all of these processed foods and, you know, stopped eating hot dogs and this sort of stuff, the world would be a much better place. So... Which brings me to Joe Rogan's spiel on the issue is literally just lack of discipline, people not being able to stick to stuff. Like, that's just a discipline issue, which created an issue on Facebook within a comment, because the comment, I'm not sure if you saw it, but the comment on Facebook was like, no, that's a very one-sided view. What about people who have this? We go back to the overweight. Yeah. We go back to these conversations. And they say it's not the same, but if they did start something, then again, we go back to the, well, then your markers are going to improve anyway, just by starting something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you as a coach, how would you encourage people to get through this or break through initially? How would you walk them through it?
Well, I've got some of my clients listening on here. I can see them pop on. So hello, clients. and they will know that I'm pretty cutthroat when it comes to no bullshit. That's why they get coached by me. I'm not going to beat around the bush and be like, oh, it's okay that you binged on the weekend. Let's just jump back into the next week. I'm going to be like, no, let's go back to what I was saying before about the triggers. What are the triggers that are causing the poor performance, poor behavior, poor compliancy? Because like you said, I would say the majority of people, it's lack of adherence and lack of patience is the big one as well.
Okay.
So not being patient enough, wanting the results overnight, and then they know when they do those diets to get the results overnight, they rebound. So it's a combination of patience and compliance, and I call it the really unsexy part of getting results, because it doesn't sound sexy. You got to be patient and you got to be compliant. It's like, oh, boring. I know, but that's where the magic happens. So I guess coming back to this, look, you do have a few outliers. That is 100% true. And you also have bad coaching. So let's say, for example, if someone does give out a crap meal plan, some crappy ebook, whatever, and the person is compliant to that and doesn't get a result, absolutely, it can sometimes be the actual plan itself, depending on where they're at when they start. So if there's someone that's severely overweight, has a lot of weight to shift, they're not exercising at all, and they've got this e-book and it just gets them moving and gets them eating a bit cleaner, they're going to get results, okay? They're going to get some sort of response. But
without a doubt,
if there's someone that's already dieted before, has a damaged metabolism, has a bad relationship with food, is binge eating, all of these things, and then they try to do that, they might not get a result, and then they're going to blame that for sure. And that sometimes can be the case. So I think it's a combination of good coaching and compliancy. Now, also, if I'm working with a client and they are not getting a result. So let's say, for example, I'm checking in every week and they hit a plateau. And 1 week, pretty normal. A lot of the time with females, I'll look at when their menstrual cycle is, and surprise, surprise, it's usually around that time. And I'll be like, cool, just chill. Like, let's wait a week. But if it's a couple of weeks, then I'll be like, okay, I'm looking at the numbers, we've made changes, we've got more aggressive, we've done whatever, and they're still not dropping. And like the science side of me is going, this should be happening, you know, we're doing everything and I don't want to push them any harder. And then sometimes it's having a really big conversation and calling them out on the bullshit. And you would be surprised. I did a video today in my coaching group and I had two of my clients email me and be like, thank you for doing that video today. I haven't been honest with you. I've been having a couple of glasses of extra wine. I've been doing this and this. I haven't been tracking snacks. And I was like, no shit. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's a case of compliancy is key, but also honesty with the coach you're working with. So if you are being 110% honest, and I have got clients that are honest, that are doing everything, and their bodies are stubborn. They have slow metabolisms. They may have a few hormonal issues. Sure, that can be super frustrating and hard for them. But again, that's a case of patience and sticking to the plan and us making the appropriate changes. Now, if you're working with a coach and let's say when you are hitting those sticking points and you are being 100% compliant, they're still not making any changes. They're like, yeah, just keep going. Then that's an issue with the coaching. So I think it's definitely a combination of good coaching, compliancy, patience, and that healthy relationship between you and the coach or the person giving out the diet, that if you are being compliant and you're not getting a result, you're speaking up. And if you aren't being so compliant, not being scared to say to them, because the biggest thing with compliance is I never want to just say to a client, be more compliant. Okay. That doesn't really motivate someone.
I probably would. I'd be a horrible coach.
Yeah. We want to instead go, I'm not that horrible. Unless you're like a week out from a show, then I'll be like, what are you doing? But generally speaking, I want to know why they're not compliant. So let's say, for example, the client says to me, say they've been like in a dieting phase for 10, 12 weeks, and they go, I'm so hungry, and that's why I'm overeating, say, 100, 200 calories a day. Then I can be like, cool, how are you going fitting in your training volume? Can we maybe keep food a little higher and add a bit more training volume so that you can be more compliant whilst being in an energy deficit? Now, if the client is saying to me, I'm not compliant on these days of the week because I'm stuck in meetings and I don't get to eat and blah, 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 cool, let's figure out some strategies. Maybe we leave a protein shake in at work that you can sip on in your meeting. Maybe we add this and this because they're getting home at night and binging because they're starving and haven't eaten all day.
Yeah.
Or I've got clients who it's very emotional. It's very emotionally oriented. You know, they have a fight with their boyfriend. All of a sudden, they turn to food. So the mental psychology comes a lot into compliance, which is why we actually have an NLP therapist that works within my coaching team so that when clients are really struggling with this, we're like, call them in. A lot of the stuff I can handle, but if it's bigger stuff like binge eating, emotional eating, even things like physical trauma, sexual abuse, like it gets quite heavy. You would be surprised. When you dig deep and you hit that stuff, you're like, okay, I get it. And I've had that stuff with clients where I've had to go, this is beyond me. I need to bring in an expert because that's their field. And then once they've worked that out, then we can get back on track. Because right now, if that's the thing blocking your compliancy, the fact that, you know, when you're a kid, you were overweight and blah, blah, blah. And it goes back quite far. Like, you'd be surprised. It's pretty intense. Like, I was scared of carbs because their mum was always on a low carb diet. And whenever they eat carbs, they think they're fat automatically. Like, all these sort of
psychology.
And then they go on binge. So I think compliancy is a big topic, and it has to come down to also sometimes just fucking laziness, you know? And having to really say to a client, how important are your goals? If your goals are not motivating you enough and the couch is more motivating and watching an episode of Power on Netflix than going to the gym, then we need to have a chat about your goals, about your training program. So compliancy, I think that the client needs to take accountability and also the coach to ask those deeper questions of why aren't you compliant? And if a client says to me, I don't know, that is a cop-out. I will not take the I don't know, okay? You have to dig a little deeper and go, why, what's going on? Talk me through your day from the moment you get out of bed to you go to bed. And that's what good coaching is about. It's not about the perfect plan. It's about how do you help your client when they're struggling. And I think that that's really important because a lot of people will pay online coaches and they're like, oh, it's, you know, it's $30 a week. It's way cheaper than what you charge. And I'm like, yeah, they're going to give a shit when you're in the pantry binge eating? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you pay for what you get when it comes to coaching as well. If you are struggling with something compliancy-wise, all of that, anything mindset, you need that extra support, then that's really important as well. But yeah, simple answer is figure out the triggers, figure out a way forward, and you've got to figure out maybe the plan's not motivating you enough, or maybe it's too aggressive and you need to taper it back a little bit and be a little more patient. And what is it that's actually blocking that compliancy?
That's awesome. That's a really, really good response. Hey, that's pretty much as much detail as more detail. That was a lot. That was good. All right, I'm gonna open it up for people. So if you have a question for Alice, chuck it down below. Whilst people are typing it in, we'll give them a little bit of time. So guys, speed it through. How do you think your boy went? Sorry, I should rephrase that. How do you think Lane went on Joe Rogan?
Yeah, I think he did really well. He didn't really let Dom talk. I was like, poor Dom. But He was really good, and he was still kind. Him and Dom are really good friends, so I think that it's for them. And I think that Lane gets a bad rap. He has been through a lot of personal stuff over the last year, and a lot of people are like, oh, he's a horrible guy, you shouldn't listen to him. Look, people make mistakes in life. We're all human. We all fuck up. And he's now trying to turn his life around. I've had several chats with him about it. And he's in a really good place now where he just wants to help people again and do good things. So I think that he's a really great example in terms of knowledge and just general care and ethics. Ethics is really key to him. And when you hear someone who's passionate and ethical, that is massive. Like, and that's, we need more people like that in the world who aren't trying to sell things, aren't trying to push things. And yeah, I think he really was great for the flexible dieting lifestyle and for this whole industry of bodybuilding, powerlifting, lifestyle, all of this kind of integrated. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think you did a really, really good job. Like, you couldn't really fault much of what he said. And yeah, like what he says is like, he can back it up. I think it was a really good discussion. I think that did well. It was really interesting. I really recommend, if people haven't listened to it, go check it out, much more so than the one prior to that. It definitely wasn't as productive. No, that's cool. Well, is there anything that you want to leave people off with?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing at the end of the day, if you're looking at, like I said before, the perfect dieting strategy, do you go vegan, do you go paleo, do you go this, do you go that? Figure out what are you actually trying to achieve, and also knowing your body and what's worked. Because if you know you've been on restrictive diets before and they haven't worked and you've rebounded and you think the best thing to do is go keto or go vegan purely from a cutting out food group standpoint, not from an ethical standpoint or any of those things, then have a really good think about, hey, I've been doing that and it hasn't been working. Why continue doing the same thing? Maybe I should try adopting more of a flexible approach. Maybe I should try be a little more patient but more flexible, and then I'll be able to enjoy my life and it not be so like diet off diet, because that's not the way you want to live if you want to actually get long-term sustainable results as well. And I think that's the biggest thing that I want to achieve with people, is like the stopping the yo-yo and the hunting for something, the next quick, you know?
Yeah, that's true. You know what? Even I find in myself, like on that note, because I talk about like the just do it, and I say it like I've got myself together and I never do anything, man. If I'm like really busy or I've got a lot going on, and I try not to eat outside of my means, like I don't get fat, but like last night I had a 3-hour video shoot, and I got home and I was just so cooked that I ended up getting like a pizza on the way home because I knew that I hadn't eaten a lot. And I knew it would be okay, but that's probably like the third time this week that that's happened. You know what I mean? just because of my work schedules. And so like, I guess my point with it is that there's different seasons in people's lives. People rarely have it together all the time. But I think
it's together. That's I think even as a professional, like I, like to be honest, like I have only really started tracking my macros again about the end of last year. I didn't track macros for about 3 years before that. I was kind of like intuitively, and a lot of people ask, well, is intuitive eating a great way to eat? Whole another discussion on that. But the thing with intuitive eating is you can't just intuitive eat if you don't know how to eat properly. So
correct.
Intuitive eating is very different to someone else who's eating KFC 3 times a day. So basically from that standpoint, I wasn't doing it because I was very focused on my business, I was focused on my clients, and I just needed a little bit of a break from, you know, weighing everything and tracking and all of that. And, you know, I was loosely tracking, but still I wasn't obese. I didn't get, you know, I was still at a healthy body fat level, sure, a little bit chunkier for me, but I was still happy and healthy and strong and all of those things that I want my women to be empowered to feel. And it does come in waves and flows. So right now at the moment, I'm contest prep. I need to weigh everything. I need to be more strict. But at the same time, what's happening then on the back end is I don't have quite as much time for my friends and family right now. I can't go to as many social events. And that's okay. It's an equilibrium. And this is only for an extended period of time. Cool. Once that's done, a bit more relaxed with the food, this comes up. But the biggest thing I can say to all of that is don't expect results from work that isn't being put in. So if you know, for example, you've got that week like you do this week where, you've eaten out a few times and you've had a bit of food that maybe didn't adhere to what you were trying to achieve, and you get on the scale, say, on Sunday, and you've gone up a kilo, and you're like, I really deserve to lose weight this week. It's like, well, did you? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
you did it. You did it. Sorry, so yeah, my whole point of the pizza thing was the mentality of going of trying to find that silver bullet. So I, like, you know, I've had this bad week, and then last night I come home and I'm like, Shell, that's it. I've got to start tracking my macros, but like, which is fine because there's a level of accountability. But when you start going, oh man, I've got to go low carb, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And I even have a tendency to say that, and I know that's stupid. You know what I mean? It's like, I've got to do something. It's like, no, you've just got to be compliant, man.
Yeah, you've just got to not eat like
yeah, exactly. All right, Shannon's question. Can you recommend a course for someone who's just completed Cert 4 in fitness to learn more about nutrition to be able to advise clients? What nutrition course would you recommend?
Oh, to be honest, it's a hard one because people ask me this all the time, and I probably don't go and research them myself. I've already done my courses, so I probably need to go and maybe research somewhat a little bit more. So I went through university and did a solid 6 years there. So if you want to go to uni and do 6 years, by all means, I would recommend that. But a lot of people don't want to do that and don't want to invest the time nor the money. Look, it depends if you want to get qualified and certified. ISSN, anything ISSN certified is going to be where you need to look. Is not certified. I will say that clearly because a lot of people think it is and then they spend $3,000. It's not certified, albeit a really good course. So if you want to do it though and gain knowledge, sure. I've read the books and stuff like that. I haven't done the course, obviously, but I had a friend who had the books. And then, yeah, I would say anything like that that is certified. But to be honest, like as long as you get your base and your foundation, you're going to learn so much when you actually start working with clients. Obviously, get certified first. But then when you learn and evolve, you know what the best way that I learned, to be honest, was getting coached by Lane. So after university, well, actually about, I was in the last year when I started getting coached by him. I learned so much from having a coach and having a mentor. And my clients are exactly the same. Like I was chatting to one of them today, two of my coaches that work for me. And I said to Jess, I said, how did you learn what you learned? And she's like, from everything that you and Sean taught me. You know, from everything that I picked up, the questions you can ask a coach, you can bounce things off them. So I think that a course, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a coach, but invest in mentors and people that you can learn from. Go to courses, go to seminars, get your base certification. But most of the base certifications are really basic. That's why they
Yeah.
Then you want to keep furthering your education and knowledge by learning from other people around you. Shameless plug here, but myself and my partner Sean, who's another amazing coach in Perth, we are creating a course that's going to be released early next year in January, but we're not going to be doing nutrition for this one. It's going to be training, business development and mindset for personal trainers and people that want to transition into online coaching. But if the need's there, then we may create a nutritional one as well. Obviously, we probably won't have it actually certified, but again, you do a basic course, something that certifies you, and then just keep building your knowledge by being around educated people. Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned that you learned more off-lane just by getting coached by him, because one of the things that he stated was he learned more from being a coach just by coaching people than what he did through his PhD, just because how everyone was so different, what they had to learn to change the response for different people.
Yeah,
that's really cool. That's so cool. All right, if there's no more questions, I think that's cool, man. That's sweet. That's good to wrap it up. So everyone, 95%, do some fitness. Don't eat like an asshole. And
be compliant.
Be compliant. I think that's it. All right, we're good. Alice, thanks, dude. I'll come catch up with you soon. Thanks, people.
Thanks,
guys. Bye. That's it. Awesome. Thanks for tuning in, guys. This is going to be live tomorrow on SoundCloud and on iTunes. Any feedback is good. Make sure comment, engage in our stuff. Check out the new YouTube channel. But it is 7:41 and I am ready to sign off. Peace.